everybody. Welcome back to Screen Heroes. I am Derek, one of your regular hosts. I have my other two weekly hosts with me, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hi.
How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing well. We are back for another episode before we go to Kansas City Comic Con.
Yes, that is this weekend.
We are going to be hosting a live episode, which, I mean, we do live episodes every week, so that's not too different for us, but...
Seems likely that we will be speaking to an empty room, but...
Yes.
Somebody's bound to show up by accident,
maybe
right?
By accident, yeah.
Or
that's
they'll think they need to save a seat for the next
They'll
panel.
Leave shortly after, don't worry. Know.
We're of course, in the legendary Hall H.
We are in the panel room right next to the bathroom, so
well, that's just convenient.
People will mistake us for the bathroom.
We'll get the scents wafting out to us.
We actually have no idea where we are yet, so
I don't even know what time.
We don't know
the schedule quite yet, but we will be hosting a live episode of Screen Heroes at Kansas City Comic Con this weekend.
We are ranking all of the Batman.
To be clear, we're not live streaming it. So no. When we say live, we're going to be live to the people in the room.
Sorry, it's our first live studio audience episode.
There you go.
Of Screen Heroes, so you'll have to be there in person.
We've ranked quite a few things in the past, so this isn't new for those who have joined us. But for those that haven't, we're going to go from our least favorite to our most favorite Batman.
Should be a good time.
Yes.
Two of our other shows are going to be doing live episodes at KCCC as well, Gamer Heroes and Costume Couture. So go to at Heroes Podcast on Twitter and Facebook when we will be announcing our schedules for that. But we also have a booth. We will be at booth number 643, which is kind of a corner booth, which is pretty cool. Excited about that. You guys are going to have your own booths. I'm going to be with Jeremy from Red Shirts and Runabouts and Ian from Costume Couture.
We are like a triforce of everything this weekend. So,
do you guys want to say where you're going to be?
I believe I'm CP14. I'm in the back. The very back.
Not the very back.
If you're near the exit, you can find me.
Yep.
If you're just getting ready to exit out the South Dock.
Which you shouldn't be doing.
Which you shouldn't be doing unless you're a vendor. But yeah, that's where Rachel will be.
Yes.
And what about Buster Props?
I don't know my booth number. It's like 719 or something.
No, you're like in the 400s.
Okay, that is 417 and 419.
If they have pipe and drape, I won't be able to see you. If they don't, I will be able to spot you.
We're going to send messages. We're going to ball up paper and throw it at each other and hope that it gets to the right
person.
Whatever.
Enough birds get into Bartle Hall. Carrier
pigeon, right?
Yes.
Just train a carrier pigeon. But yeah, that's where I'll be. We have two tables. Basically, you just go down the main aisle, then you'll see us on the side there on the right hand side. It's pretty easy. Should be pretty easy to find us.
We make our three booths together make a nice triangle.
Yeah,
an isosceles triangle.
Generally, 3 points do that.
So if you go into the center of that triangle, you'll disappear forever.
If we just bring a couple more people into the Heroes Podcast Network, then we can have a pentagram and just
a summon Constantine.
We'll do that the Matt
Winchester.
Ryan comes. Yes, now you're talking. His table will be right in the middle.
I love it. This is perfect.
Fantastic.
But that's this weekend, November 10th, 11th, and 12th, so come see us there.
Check us out. Bring lots of money. It's a con, people. They want you to spend your money.
No, I want you to spend your money at my table. Please.
The HPN is not selling anything, but come by and say hi to us. We're going to be talking to people about all of our shows and things of that
maybe
nature.
Maybe some new shows.
Maybe.
Come and talk to Derek.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I'm also moderating a couple of other panels.
What are you moderating?
We don't know for sure.
Well, since I don't have my official schedule yet, you know, anything could happen. But one of them is specific to podcasting and media that I'll be doing with Notes and Nerds. So I'm looking forward to that. And then the other one I'm not going to say anything about yet because if it doesn't happen, then I don't want to get anybody's hopes up. So.
Okay.
But it'd be cool.
By the way, I don't even know about this, and I live with him.
So. I've told you. I know I've told you.
No.
But let's move on to news.
All right. So this week was kind of balls to the wall crazy.
Was it?
I mean,
I had my balls on a wall, so.
I did not.
Okay. Well, you were busy at BlizzCon.
I was.
Yeah.
If you want to know about my experience at BlizzCon, listen to this week's Gamer Heroes.
Came out today. Yeah.
Continue.
All right. So... Disney tried to buy Fox, and immediately everybody thought, what happens to the superheroes? they don't give a crap about the superheroes. It was so they could get The Simpsons and Family Guy on their streaming network. Because that...
And Futurama.
...is worth, like, millions of dollars. Whereas X-Men and Fantastic Four, not worth as much as The Simpsons, believe it or not. So...
Yeah. But it would have the side effect of bringing those characters under the Marvel umbrella.
That would have happened.
It would. That's definitely true. But those who don't know, Disney had announced that they wanted to start their own streaming service, which, of course, makes some interesting things happen on Netflix and Hulu. Disney owns a 30% stake in Hulu, by the way. And, of course, they have a partnership with Netflix with, you know, the Defenders shows. So a lot of that's going to be changing in 2019 and 2020 when certain contracts are up and Disney can launch their streaming service.
Yes.
So to have shows like The Simpsons and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Futurama to throw onto their streaming service with the more general Disney stuff.
Fox doesn't own Buffy.
Are you sure?
Fox owns Dollhouse and Firefly.
But not Buffy?
No.
Okay. The article I was reading specifically called out Buffy.
That's weird. I mean, maybe Whedon ended up selling it afterwards, but it was never on Fox to begin with, so it was
interesting.
Buffy was on the WB and ended on CW.
Which would be a Warner Brothers property still with CBS. So that is interesting.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that article was mistaken then. That's where I got that information
it's
from.
Possible.
So oops.
It's possible. I don't know who owns the licenses to Buffy at this point. I assumed because Whedon hates Fox so much after they screwed him on two shows, he would keep a hold of them as much as possible. So.
That's fair. Now, there is one other very interesting tidbit that this might bring into play, and that is the mystical original Star Wars trilogy in HD.
Yes.
For those who don't know, the main reason this has never happened is that regardless of what Disney buys, Fox owns perpetual rights to Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, or just back then, Star Wars. Which means that in order to get the rights to that movie, you basically have to buy 20th Century Fox.
Yes.
So if Disney were to do that, then they would then have the legal rights to remaster and re-release the original Star Wars trilogy prior to the special editions.
Yeah. A lot of people were also calling out monopolies. Our government does not care about monopolies, guys.
They care sometimes. Like, when it comes to cable companies, they care.
Very rarely do they interfere at this point. Like, monopolies, people just go for it.
Like, I mean, the bigger the companies are, the more it becomes an issue. When you talk about cell phone carriers, if you're talking about cable providers, cable TV providers, it has stopped some mergers in the past, fairly recently. So this would be up there on the list, considering what Fox does own the rights to, between Star Wars, the Marvel franchises, the TV franchises. Disney's also, from a political standpoint, Disney's also in a little bit of hot water.
Because of the LA Times feud.
Yeah, they banned the LA Times from any kind of press screenings for any of their properties moving forward, which has now caused a lot of movie awards organizations to basically disqualify any Disney property from their award ceremonies for 2017, 2018 until this is resolved.
Yes.
If Disney is doing that, then the FCC has a bigger reason not to allow the monopoly. So this is not a good time for all of that to be going down.
Correct. It's not going to happen. The deal is completely stalled. Disney tried. It's done. It's not moving forward.
Honestly, I would have guessed Sony would have sold first before Fox. I didn't see that coming. But
well, I mean,
Sony has a lot of failing large properties that have been previously successful and are failing now.
Yes.
The main one for me that springs to mind is obviously Ghostbusters, but
and Spider-Man.
Spider-Man is another big one. I mean, it's that one I saw just selling out to Disney way before Fox.
Sony has the advantage of having other branches of their company that keep them above water, like PlayStation, for example, and their music.
Well, like, Fox is not selling everything to Marvel
right.
either,
no,
so, I mean, they could easily do the same thing.
Yeah. I understand.
Sony Entertainment, I guess I should say,
right.
is specifically what I would...
Sony Pictures.
Sony Entertainment is PlayStation. So.
I guess because Sony has made the deal now with Marvel, they probably aren't in a rush, whereas
right.
Fox doesn't have any deals with Marvel right now that are unique, so... They might be in more of a pressure situation. So
sure.
It's a little surprising though, because you know Fox, of course, you know they would. I guess they would. Would they retain Fox Sports?
Fox will keep Fox Sports, according to the article I read.
Because what's interesting there is, you know,
I also thought they kept like the Fox and FX like channels. Like,
so this is just the movies?
Yeah, I thought it was the content. I thought it was content. Okay. I thought, but they still could, like, Disney would be able to use and show Fox shows, but so could Fox still. Fox just couldn't use any of Disney stuff.
Interesting.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, I just found it interesting.
I thought that's how I read it.
That is interesting. A lot of sports viewership is down across the board. And so from a financial standpoint, Disney's having a hard time keeping ESPN afloat. So...
You don't need seven channels and three of them.
What about the Ocho?
That's the only one they need to keep.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I want to watch squirrel water skiing and dodgeball.
I will say at BlizzCon, the guy who kind of like runs the commentator circle for it, I guess, he just like comes off as the best ESPN 8 the Ocho anchor you could possibly come up with. And we couldn't get over that all weekend. But anyway. So what else we have in the news?
Other things.
Justice League is really good. Justice League is really bad. Also, Justice League is mediocre.
So somewhere in there...
And it's the best Whedon film.
You mean to tell me that people have differing opinions about a piece of art?
Well, I get a little bit nervous just because like BVS was pretty split, too. There was a lot of critics that came out and said, yeah, it was good. And then there's a bunch that were like, nope. And they just crapped all over it. And, you know.
I mean, you know...
It's true. Right after it happened, like, our friends went to Facebook and half of them were like, that was a great movie. And the others were like, that was trash.
Yeah. Martha! Yeah. You know.
Obviously, we're going to see it soon.
And to be clear, WB said that they can't, nobody, there's an embargo on press reviews until, I think, the day or 2 days before the movie is released, which is not putting a lot of confidence in the movie. But also, you could make arguments for it either way.
I mean, it's not abnormal.
Well, when Marvel is releasing press screenings and embargoes a month before their movie comes out.
Right, a lot gets spoiled. The entire movie
was ruined. Well, there's that, but I mean, they're much more confident in the movie.
Somebody had a really tight embargo on something recently that people were kind of negative about the fact.
Wasn't it Defenders?
Was
I thought
it?
Defenders had a shorter embargo than Iron Fist or something, and people were...
The Marvel movies are usually like, for example, we saw Civil War like a month ahead of time.
We did.
And that was because Marvel is really confident in that property, and they, you know...
But it might not be a confidence thing. It could be a spoiler thing. I mean, we have two...
We want them to spoil it? They want spoilers on it?
What I'm saying is the kinds of spoilers that they are matters. In Thor Ragnarok, which we'll be talking about in a bit... The spoilers aren't the focus of the movie, and we'll talk about what I mean by that later. But in Justice League, we have like two possible characters that could be very, very spoiled in this movie for people that could be a main plot point and reason for the movie. So if you ruin that for people, that's, you know.
I think that's the optimistic side of it. I don't think that they really care about spoilers getting released. I mean, everybody knows Superman's coming back, right? So that's not really a spoiler.
But
if
everybody
it was,
doesn't.
Okay.
I mean, the core comic book fan base knows it, right? We know it, but the average moviegoer, I'm not sure, does. He hasn't been in any press materials. He hasn't been on any marketing materials.
The average moviegoer is probably not reading reviews of the movie a month ahead of time to have that spoiled for him either.
It depends, because we're in the age where titles of articles just ruin stuff for people all the time. And so all you need is somebody on your Facebook feed to reshare an article that says, you know, Dumbledore dies, and
that person's not going to go see that movie, right?
That's not what I mean.
Well, then what's the point of embargoing it until 2 days ahead? I don't think it has anything to do with spoilers.
I think it creates a bad experience for the moviegoers. It ruins something for me if something is spoiled for
me. I'm sure it does, but you still go see the movie. And ultimately, that's what they care about. They don't care about the experience for the moviegoers. They just care that they have money in their pockets. It's a business. But
maybe we don't know why, so we can argue about it all we want. But.
Right, but I mean, I think that most people are saying that the reason why it's doing that is because of BVS, and all the bad reviews came out ahead of time, and they think that ruined or hurt the box office. Obviously, it made a lot of money.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, that's why that argument doesn't work for me, because it made a ton of money.
But would it have made more if there weren't a bunch of people crapping on it ahead of time?
That's incredibly hypothetical.
Yeah, who knows? But this one, with it being the reviews not coming out until 2 days before the movie, you know, it's probably less likely that people are going to go, oh, it's terrible on Rotten Tomatoes because the critic reviews are going to be the same time as the like regular.
Well, and most people 2 days ahead of time, most people are going to have their tickets to opening night already in today's age versus, you know, waiting till the day of and going to the box office. So.
True. I just think it's, I think that it's kind of ridiculous. The people, every time I see a news article, it says Justice League disappointing. And then another one that's like, this person says Justice League is going to be surprisingly good and wait until you see it. It's like, okay, guys, it doesn't have to be a news article every time one critic says that it's either good or bad.
Well, but it's about clicks, right? That's what our whole internet concept is based off of, ad revenue clicks.
I saw one today that says Jason Momoa confirms that Justice League is basically a Marvel movie because they added an end credit scene. Like, that's it.
He did confirm that. That was some news. There's an end credit scene.
But other things have done that.
The fact that like somehow Marvel has retconned their way into inventing that concept, it kind of bothers me because it happened long before.
It was in A Knight's Tale. Like,
there are some old movies that have post credit scenes.
There's Bueller's Day Off.
There you go. Right? Yeah.
I'm sure it's just Green Lantern showing up. Nobody's going to want to see that anyway. So
I mean, maybe. I think if you wait to do that, that's kind of lame. It better be something else.
If that is your end credit scene, then bravo for keeping his casting on the DL. Because right? I have not heard
one
thing.
Well, to be fair, like Shazam has been shooting for a while, and they've just now announced, you know, who's playing.
They are really good about keeping that
title.
That's
true. We have like 2 weeks worth of news because we didn't have a podcast last week.
Yeah, it totally threw us off.
So Zachary Levi. Yes. Is Shazam and Asher
the name of the kid,
Disney Angel. Kid number 4.
Looks like a young Zachary Levi, though.
Yeah,
so
he
looks a lot
it.
Like the Billy Batson in the comic books. So yeah,
and I mean no disrespect to the actor, because I just don't know who he is. I don't watch kid Disney shows.
His first name is Asher. I did catch that part, but
I have heard good things about him from people that have kids that watch those shows, and so they watch him. They said that he's very like bubbly and like energetic, and he
Billy Batson all the way.
So
I love Zachary Levi. If you've never seen
too.
Chuck,
I haven't.
Then you haven't seen his best work, in my opinion.
He's Flynn Rider. He is a Disney prince, and that puts him on a pedestal for me, so I love
that's
that.
That's fine, but it was animated.
He's also a Marvel character.
He was in 0.35 seconds of Ragnarok.
And he was in 1.35 seconds of the other two movies. Actually, I guess he was little more in the first Thor.
No, he was not in the first Thor. Josh Dallas played Fandral.
Really? He has the original Thor on his IMDb.
It shouldn't. Zachary Levi was not in it. It was Josh Dallas from Once Upon a Time.
Pretty sure I saw it.
Was he in reshoots, maybe?
No.
Interesting.
No, Josh Dallas couldn't come back to the second one because of Once Upon a Time.
Well, I didn't. So I saw in the credits that Zachary Levi was in Ragnarok, and I was like, was he though?
Right.
Well, when I saw the Shazam casting, I looked at his IMDb, and I was like, wait a second, Thor? What the...
I completely forgot that he was in that.
I'm not familiar with Zachary Levi, but I have people close to me, including Derek, that are familiar with him and are very excited about that casting. Shazam is one of my favorite superheroes, so I'm very excited about that casting too, just because I trust the people that have told me it's going to be good.
Well, I remember when
he needs to beef up. I'll say that about him.
So when Gary
Cavill has, because he tweeted a picture the other day.
That's true. I did
Asher
see a picture.
Angel, and it was just like right here, but I could see his arm muscle, and I'm like, oh.
And there's another picture somebody else posted of like him looking super jacked.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh well, now it makes sense why he's really jacked.
I mean, look, when Gal Gadot was first cast as Wonder Woman, my first gut reaction was she's a little on the small side for Wonder Woman, right? And that does not matter after we saw her in the role.
It's a little different for females, I feel like, in a lot of cases. Like Black Widow doesn't need to be huge and muscular, right?
Usually people are concerned about tits. Well, you're not.
Seems like it.
It was a huge argument that her breasts weren't big enough to be Wonder Woman.
For me, it was that Wonder Woman's an Amazon, and Amazons are supposed to be fairly large people, right? So for me, that I was like, well, how's that going to work? And it clearly didn't matter. Right, but for...
So you think a skinny Shazam is going
to
be okay.
I'm not saying skinny, but he doesn't have to look like The Rock either.
Except he kind of does, because they're given the powers by the same wizard, so... I mean...
I know.
But the thing is, if he doesn't, they can use a lot of muscle suit. I was thinking about this the other day, because when are you ever going to see the character of Shazam outside of his...
Probably.
You know what I mean? You're not going to see him outside of that.
Right. He can't just...
see the kid.
Yeah.
That's why I'm not really worried about
it. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure he'll have a nice muscle suit, just like everybody else in the...
Like the Beast in the New Beauty and the Beast or something. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's not, like, that's not what I'm worried about. I think he's got the personality for
it. That's more important, for sure.
And that's... And I really like him. And I was kind of bummed that he hadn't done more work after Chuck, because it was a lovely show.
He got the starring role in the Heroes reboot.
Yeah,
Heroes Reborn or whatever. And that sadly did not take off. But I eventually went back and watched the pilot episode. He was great. He was great. I can see why the show failed, but he was good.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't doubt him at all. I doubt the stuff that people give him.
That's the real issue, and so I'm glad that he's getting this opportunity.
And the director for that movie, the Shazam movie, is somebody I'm very excited about, so I think it'll be, it's shaping up to be something really special.
I'm excited about it. It's a very, it's interesting, because it's almost like they're Thor. You know, because he gets his power. He's
kind
not
of,
a god, but he gets his powers from mythological gods. There's some parallels. I know it's not the same. But I'm excited to see them go with the Greek route rather than the Norse route and see what kind of differences.
And there's going
to
be the people complaining, he's got the same powers as Superman. Well, first of all, Superman doesn't have the wisdom of Solomon, okay?
But Shazam was written by a competing comic company as a Superman ripoff. And at one point, in the 40s and 50s, Shazam was more popular. He had the Shazam family, which was more popular.
Oh,
and
yeah.
DC, instead of fighting it and shutting it down, they bought the entire company. They did the same thing with Green Arrow.
Yeah.
And there were a few other characters that were just more popular, and they were like, nope, they're ours now. So
we'll take them. And they never shut them down. They kept them going, because obviously, I mean, you know, Arrow was the anchor show for the CW universe.
There was a bunch of controversy because Zachary Levi, that's his name, right?
Yeah.
He tweeted that in the original Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, what? No! And then James Gunn's like, guys, he was the original Captain Marvel. I thought he's stupid.
I loved that he tweeted, he was on Instagram, and I love that he posted that so much because, like, I thought it was really petty that Marvel did the whole lawsuit thing against DC and forced them to change the character.
Well, because they can only have one copyright for the movie. Like, it doesn't matter who has the copyright in the comics, but movies.
Yeah, he's not going to be called Captain Marvel, like, in the title,
but
obviously.
It felt really petty because the DC character was around first, and the word Marvel by itself isn't, like, it's used outside of Marvel Comics and Marvel Studios, and so does DC own the rights to those two letters next to each other? Like, that just seems weird.
I'm wondering, I'm wondering how they're going to deal with it in the movie context, because since the wizard's name is Shazam, like, are they still going to call this guy, like, it's kind of a weird...
How,
like,
is he going to introduce himself to anybody? He can't say his own name.
No, he can, that's stupid. Yes, he can say his own name. He has to mean it for it to be...
Yeah, that's why he usually...
No, I mean, it depends on the writer, but in general, it's very easy for them to go,
he didn't mean it. Switch back and forth. Like, if he screams at lightning, if he's just like, hey man, I'm Shazam, what's up?
Like, yeah. I mean, I'm sure they're not going to be like, every time he accidentally says Shazam.
It'd be a great scene, though, right?
No, it would be dumb. Like, it would be... It's funny to think about.
Worthy of Thor Ragnarok, maybe?
Let's talk about Thor Ragnarok. All right, bust out your numbers.
So, yes, okay, so box office results for Thor Ragnarok.
And Rotten Tomatoes, please.
It did, of course, win the box office, shocking nobody. It only went up against A Bad Mom's Christmas and LBJ. Those were the only two new movies this weekend. It did, of course, go up against Jigsaw in its second weekend. It brought in $122.7 million its opening weekend on a $180 million budget, which is decent money. I feel like that's lower than they had projected. If you bring in its $308 million international number, which is really nice, that puts it at almost $440 for its opening weekend.
Thor Ragnarok currently is sitting at a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes,
which is really good. If we look at the Thor series just kind of as a whole here for opening weekends, it crushes the first two movies. The first was 65.7, the second was 85.7, and this, of course, was 122.7. So clearly something about the way this movie was marketed really drew people in more. Was it Hulk? Was it just the more kind of 80s fun style? combination of, probably. But it did really well from that standpoint. So, yeah, I mean, those are the numbers. Those are definitely strong numbers for it. If we look at the whole MCU,
we don't have to.
Okay.
It's the highest rated on Rotten Tomatoes of the entire MCU, I'm pretty sure.
It's the seventh highest opening of the 17 MCU films. So that's pretty big considering there's a lot of ensemble films above that, right? So it beats out the first Iron Man, and it beat out Winter Soldier and Guardians of the Galaxy. So, I mean, it beat out some big movies. So those are the financial numbers. Before we go into spoilers, you guys want to give just kind of your general thoughts on the movie?
Do I, though?
I have a one sentence explanation for how I feel.
Okay, I'm just gonna say this right away. I know I'm in a firing squad right now, and I came to this podcast knowing that I was gonna get crapped on by the two of you about my opinions for this movie.
No, we never.
I'm okay with it. It's gonna happen. I'm just throwing that out there, listeners. I know that they're gonna argue with me to my last breath, but I very much enjoyed the movie. I thought it was. It had flaws, but overall it was fun. It made me more interested in Thor mythology than the other Thor movies. It was the most interesting of the Thor movies. Had the best villain of the Thor movies, really, other than Loki, I guess. But that was whatever. We'll talk about Loki later.
He's
but,
the villain you want to cuddle.
Yeah, I guess. but yes, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I think that it's the funniest MCU movie, without question. But if you go into it, know that it's a pure comedy. And if you go in expecting just that, I think you'll be okay.
Right?
All right. I feel like I have to have a disclaimer.
We all get our disclaimers first.
I am going to be nitpicky about the movies because there's 17 MCU films and there are some that I like more than others. I have not seen one MCU movie that I completely hate, or that's a terrible film that hasn't existed. I enjoyed Thor Ragnarok. I laughed at jokes. At the end of the film, during the climax scene on the Bifrost, I looked up there and I said, I am sexually attracted to everyone on screen right now. Everyone.
Even Korg?
I mean, I was.
It's the voice.
As long as he keeps talking, we're good.
Right? So
the voice of Korg
was Taika Waititi. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. He was so familiar.
It did sound like Rhys Davies.
It did. Yeah, that's who I thought.
Well, he was doing like a specific dialect of New Zealand accent. Yeah, like it wasn't his normal voice,
it definitely came off as Rhys Davies, and I thought it was him for a while.
I was waiting for the Flight of the Conchords to show up somewhere in there, but it didn't happen.
He works with Flight of the Conchords quite a bit.
All the time.
So
he did quite a few episodes of that show.
What We Do in the Shadows was starring. Clement was in there. Both of them were in it.
Oh, so. I didn't know.
Yeah, one of them was the werewolf, not the swearwolf.
All right, well, now we have to watch that. That's
I wanted to watch vampire, it anyway.
So, yeah. And Rhys Darby is in it, and I mean, like, all the Flight of the Conchords people are in it. Dude, there's only like seven people in New Zealand. And six of them are actors. So
the other guy's a sheep farmer. So, no,
yeah, they gotta have
I'm kidding.
Sheep.
I'm kidding.
That's racist. But
all right. So from here on out, I am going to be nitpicky. So I'm gonna just tell you all the things I loved.
Wait, I thought we were just doing it.
Yeah,
quick.
This is just our short.
Okay.
Yeah. So for me, I also want to say that I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. I went out of the movie and I had a great time. Okay, I don't want anyone to think that I walked out of the movie mad. I have walked out of movies mad before. All right, this was not that. This was a fun time. My one liner for the movie is it seemed like a very expensive, very long SNL skit of Thor. That's what it felt like. That's not necessarily a bad thing. I don't mean that with negative or positive connotation. Okay, so let's stop there. If you haven't seen the movie yet and you care about spoilers, give us a pause, go see it, and come back. If you've seen the first two Thor movies, I think we can probably all agree that this one is definitely worth seeing.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
If you have any interest in Thor.
Yeah, you should go see it. So that's been your spoiler warning. Let's go ahead and dive into the details. Where would you guys like to start?
I think we should start from beginning to end. Like,
start at the beginning.
There's a lot of stuff. I loved the opening scene with Surtur, and like it just starts with him wrapping up, and it's like, I wonder, like
he was like sitting in the skeleton.
You wonder why I got here. Yeah. Let me tell you,
it's a good opening.
I love that. I wished that had been the first trailer and not the fight with Hulk.
Oh, that would have been fun. But I do think that the fight with Hulk was a huge draw.
Right. I get that.
Right, but it did ruin that part of the movie.
Here's why I have an issue with that. And it's I went with our friend Zach, and he said to me that as soon as he knew Hulk was in the film, the story wasn't going to start and be a story until Hulk came on screen. The first act for me was very rushed. It was character introduction, joke, character introduction, joke. It was a lot to get through, and I felt like they sped through it to get there. And I felt like it could have slowed down a bit. But that opening scene with Surtur and him fighting off all those big guys and small guys, it reminded me of a really cool D&D battle. And that's kind of what I love from Thor, is I feel like it's a game of D&D. So I love that opening scene.
Yeah, I think the opening is really fun. I think that the spinning on the chain maybe went just a little too far.
Yeah, that it was a little long.
But it's a fun scene. It's a really enjoyable scene. I liked it a lot. And Surtur, you know, because I'm not a Marvel Comics reader for the most part, and so I don't really know the character very well. And so I found that beginning to be really interesting, because I'm like, wow, he took care of that guy really quick. Like, what's going to happen in the rest of the movie? That was really a lot of fun for me. I think that the biggest hang-up for the movie is probably that it had a really fun story to tell, but it was handicapped because it also had to set up all these characters to be ready for Infinity War. And it's a little bit like, you know, some issues that Edgar Wright had with Ant-Man, where you're a little handcuffed from a creative standpoint because you have these markers that you have to hit. And you can do stuff in between those markers, but you better hit those marks.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like the opening scene.
Yeah. I mean, what you said, Rachel, about things being too rushed, that'll be something that I reference the entire time. It's one of my biggest problems with the movie. Cool. But the opening scene, you said D&D. For me, it felt like a really good He-Man episode.
Okay.
It's like, yeah. Because, yeah, you know, the dialogue that was between them, maybe reminding me of He-Man and Skeletor, and like just the whole fight and just the action when he was fighting all the other dudes, and just the whole thing felt like a He-Man.
I like that. That's a really good comparison.
And really, the whole movie, like, I absolutely loved every color that was in the movie.
It was so bright and beautiful.
Yeah, lots of neon, and, like, there were things, like, this is going off the beginning, but there's of things that are, like, that looked like fake props, and I think that was on purpose, you know? Like, when they land on the trash planet or whatever, all Sakaar, the stuff there, yeah. Sakaar, yeah. All the stuff there, that looked super fake to me, but I'm pretty sure that was on purpose, like,
because I was actually going to say that this is one of the few big budget blockbusters where I couldn't really find any like technical glitches. So,
you must not have seen the same version I saw.
Well, okay, maybe that's how did you view the movie?
2D standard.
So I saw it in IMAX.
Yeah, we did not see it in IMAX, but I will tell you that the scene where you first meet Hela in Norway, I think it was, that looked like poo.
Oh, I guess when
the
they're
green
looking
screen
over,
was
yeah, okay.
Terrible.
I forgot. You're right. The
the
green screen. I guess I'm thinking more of like the big action sequences where like I normally would look for issues.
That was an action sequence,
right?
Fighting them there.
Well, but when they walk up to their father, okay, like that looked bad.
Yeah.
Right. And that's something I guess I kind of gloss over in my head because that's the easy thing to fix, and they got the hard stuff right.
Right.
So I guess
that's
just didn't really think about it.
We're kind of running all over the place.
Yeah, we
now,
are now.
But
sorry, let's.
No, you're good. So we talked about that. I do want to make a quick note about Surtur. He's important to the Thor mythology in the comics, but he is not an important enough character to make an entire film around. And if they had, it would have been another Malekith thing where it was a blank villain for no reason, causing destruction for nothing. So I'm glad they didn't go with him for the whole thing, but I love that he was in it, that they referenced him. So
he was cool looking too.
I
thought they did a really nice job.
I thought the whole thing with like the taking the mask and having it on his back and stuff. Yeah. felt very He-Man, him walking with like a chained up thing on his back and like weapons. It was awesome.
That part was good. Next, I guess we're going to Asgard and we see Loki watching himself.
You see Odin. Well, right. Who is Loki, but yeah.
That is really fun. If everybody's focusing on Matt Damon as Loki, but Sam Neill played Odin, and Chris Hemsworth's older brother, Isaac, played Thor. So yeah. it was a fun little thing of Easter eggs right there.
I didn't know how to feel about that scene, and I still don't. I definitely believe that Loki would do something like that.
Yeah, it totally fits in with the Loki character. Like, he just wants to be worshipped, and this is the way to do it. It's watch a daily play about your heroic efforts.
I think they just made Loki this guy who's like, he's not a bad guy here because he's not doing anything to any of the people.
Yeah.
In fact, the place seems great.
Yeah, they seemed happy.
Right? Like, it looks exactly the same as the way we left it. He's not right. changing
But
anything.
I think that's part of the problem is that, and they reference this later in the movie, so maybe I'm jumping ahead, but Odin was the protector of the realms. Loki didn't protect anything. He focused on Asgard, and that was it. So that was the reason why Ragnarok all happened in the first place, and why Thanos can now come and take care of these other realms.
I knew things were bad because Heimdall wasn't there. He had left his position, not because of Hela, but because he knew Odin wasn't in Asgard, and he felt like he had to protect kind of behind the...
So he left on his own accord?
Yeah.
Okay, I took it as Loki kind of fired him.
No, I totally got it that he left, and Loki needed to fill the gap. So okay. He just had...
Misinterpretation.
Ridiculous casting. Poor Carl Urban. Scourge was... kind of a joke to me. He was, I mean, Scourge in the comics is kind of a joke because he's really Enchantress's whipping boy, not Hela's.
But they don't have Enchantress in the movies. So.
And I'm fine with that. Amora's a stupid character.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Do you guys have thoughts on the Loki play or Scourge before we move on to meeting Hela?
I talked to my brother because he went and saw the movie, and he said that the Matt Damon thing actually kind of pulled him out of the movie.
That's kind of how I feel about it.
You know, he's like, he didn't understand it in the context of the movie. And I don't think it's a joke you're supposed to understand in the context of the movie. It's supposed to take you out of the movie and go,
Holy crap,
they got Matt Damon. This is funny. You know, so, I mean, I could see how that would bother people. It really didn't bother me. I thought it was funny. And Sam Neill, yeah, and I mean, the whole play was, I thought it was pretty great.
It was kind of like
fitting for the character.
Bill Murray cameo in Zombieland. Like, it was supposed to be meta and be like, sup, dudes, we got this guy.
But I think the reason it didn't work for me is that, and maybe this is unfair because it comes up a couple of times for me in the movie. The fact that it is the 17th MCU film means that it's part of that connected universe. And it's really the first time I can think of that they did anything like that. And so it just doesn't fit the tone for me. It's kind of like how I love this Thor, but it's also inconsistent with the Thor we've had.
That's very true.
But you have to understand, this is something that I think a lot of people aren't thinking about. Marvel has gone from focusing on, it needs to be cookie cutter in this universe, this type of movie, to letting the director do their own thing. And it started with Ant-Man. And it's kind of gone from there. So every movie really has come out and been its own thing. And so something like that may be the first time in the MCU, but to be fair, this is Taika Waititi's first foray into the MCU. This is the only really successful version of Thor.
But I'm not complaining about, you know, the jokes, like what they were. Like the opening sequence and stuff like that is all really funny. But I think it's just because that scene is so self-referential in a universe that's not, that it took me out of it. It seemed weird. It seemed out of place for a Marvel movie. The director can put their stamp on it all they want, but at the end of the day, they signed up to do an MCU film. And that's something that they need to be aware of too. And
so here's the difference.
Okay.
Waititi said that, he referenced Ant-Man. He said, Edgar Wright was boxed in, and they have since learned from that. So when I signed up to do this, I specifically asked, what are my limitations? Can I kill off characters? Can I take them to different places? Can I let Chris and Mark kind of ad-lib? And they were like, you do whatever you want, and we'll rein you in if we have to.
Yeah, we'll tell you. If we need to cut something, we'll cut something. Yeah. We'll not let you.
He said that they had Marvel producers on set, like, every day. They didn't just, like, spy from afar.
Right, so what I'm saying, but that matters, though, because that keeps it more in context. right? This is still being made in the same universe that the other movies have been made in. And it's just that one scene and the changes in Thor as a character just didn't really make continuity sense to me. And I don't think it's nitpicky to say that this Thor seems completely out of place from the Thor that we've seen in the, you know, four movies.
The explanation is that he's lived on Midgard for a while.
2 years.
Yeah,
now.
2 years. And so he had started to pick up their mannerisms and their things like that.
But he hasn't really, like, I guess this is where it gets kind of confusing, right? Is, well, then if he's been on Midgard the whole time, then why has he been absent in
Civil
War?
Why wasn't he in
Civil
War?
And, like,
War?
So, like,
well, he was on Midgard up until before, so, like, through Age of Ultron, which Civil War happened shortly after Age of Ultron, and that was, there was 2 years there.
The Thor in Age of Ultron is not this Thor, is my point.
That's
right?
True.
And so that's my point. And I'm not saying that it's bad. I actually prefer this Thor. But in the universe as a whole, it seems like a totally different character.
You're right. But I think they just decided that they needed to do something different with Thor. Because Thor was not a character that... He was the least interesting MCU character by far. So they
decided to go, F it.
And we're gonna change Thor.
Here's the reason why this is my least favorite Thor. I thoroughly enjoyed the first two Thor movies. They rank very high in my personal favorites. Not because they're great. I do recognize that there are others that are better. But because that style of film, fantasy as a whole, elves and men in shining armor, that appeals to me. That's what I wanted to see.
But there's still elves and men in shining armor. I don't understand what changed there.
Nothing.
There's still... Okay, because you said this, like, is your least favorite Thor, but that's your...
Those two are fantasy films. Like, full-out fantasy. This is a sci-fi film.
This is a sci-fi...
It's a sci-fi buddy comedy.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
that's what it is.
It was Guardians of the Galaxy with different characters.
And less Guardians.
Well, I mean, there's a team of four.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's what, five Guardians, though, right? So.
Well, I mean, depending on the movie...
Yeah,
there's
more Guardians in the second one.
Yeah, Count Core gets five.
There you go, right? So, like, it's not far off. And it definitely comes off as a Guardian. In fact, I think it did Guardians of the Galaxy better than Volume 2 did.
Oh, it definitely did, yeah.
You know.
This was the best one of the year. Best Marvel movie of the year. I enjoyed Spider-Man because of Tom Holland and Michael Keaton, but I really hated Tony Stark being shoehorned in every single scene.
I've seen a lot of people go, Spider-Man is funnier. What? Were we watching the same movie?
Yeah.
Like, there's no way Spider-Man is better than this Thor movie.
I didn't want to speak on it because I feel like I have a bias against Spider-Man at this point because I'm just so burned out on Spider-Man movies.
No, I'm not burned out on Spider-Man movies, and I just don't, like, it was fine, but it was not as good as this movie, in my opinion.
I agree with you. I just thought maybe it was me. Because I have not really liked a Spider-Man movie since Spider-Man 2. So...
Yikes.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed Amazing Spider-Man, but...
I did too.
I mean, yeah. But
anyway, that's a
separate...
That.
Yeah.
So I think for me...
Spending a lot of time on this play, by the way.
We're moving on from the play.
So let's talk about Hela's introduction, because she's next. I hated Odin's death scene, and I immediately compared it to the turtle dying in Kung Fu Panda. I was like, they did that better, where he just disintegrates into flower petals.
Cherry blossoms.
Yeah. I was like, that was so much prettier in that movie, but whatever.
So
Hela was hella cool.
This is something I said I was going to reference, and so I'm referencing it now. I feel like I don't know that they needed more impact, but it felt like they should have more impact. There were several points in the movie. One we'll get to later, but two were basically in this scene where the fact that they find out they have a sister.
Yeah.
And the fact that Odin dies.
Their father's just, yeah.
And it's like completely glossed over, joke, joke, joke.
I
love
that.
Jokes, and I laughed at the jokes, but it did feel a little weird that it was a joke there, and there wasn't, like, they never got sad. Closest thing they got to said was the elevator scene when they were talking, which was great.
Yeah, it was a nice scene.
That's, I think, my real problem. The reason I call it an SNL skit is because of that. I feel like the movie doesn't have any of its own weight. There's some serious stuff that happens in this movie.
Odin's death should have made me a little more emotional than what it did, and...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You also have what's going on with Bruce Banner, the fact that he's been essentially trapped inside of Hulk for 2 years, and, you know, his realization, you know, of when he transforms back.
Natasha gives him, like, this PTSD.
Yeah. Like, and that's pretty glossed over. I mean, Thor loses an eye, and all that we get is a joke about how he looks like his father, right? Like, there's some seriously heavy stuff that happens. Like, I mean, it's gone. Ragnarok happens. Asgard is destroyed at the end of this movie. And there should, I feel like I should have been more emotional about some of those things.
I don't think that's 100% this film's fault. I think that the destruction of Asgard. I feel like Asgard has not really been developed as a location like that we care about. It's a location we know about.
Yes.
And it's pretty and stuff, but like it hasn't been developed as something we really care about very much in the MCU. So the fact that it was destroyed should have been an impactful moment in the movie, but it wasn't 100% on this movie.
No, but I feel like the characters that were watching it happen weren't as upset as I thought they should be. How about that? Because all of them were like, because they were very big on the whole Asgard's a people, not a place. And I appreciate that sentiment.
But even the extras in the back that are like, I just abandoned my home for you bastards. Like,
I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, they saved themselves as a people, but this was their home for most of them, their entire existence.
Centuries.
Yeah, it was here. Most never even left, right? So I feel like the characters should have been more upset about it. And that in turn would have made me feel more upset about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the whole Hulk thing, I mean, they talk about how Hulk has, like, a trilogy coming up inside of these other movies, but we barely talk about the fact that, like, he's been trapped inside of Hulk, doesn't really know what happened for 2 years. He's got to deal with that. He's on an alien world for the first time ever with a bunch of people who think it's totally normal, and he's got to wrap his head around that and get back into normal social structure in a totally foreign place. And then willingly become Hulk again to help save the day at the end of the
would
movie.
Would you? I feel like you'd rather this movie have been a super heavy, like, dark movie.
No, I don't think it needed to. I think it needed to.
It's called Thor Ragnarok. That's the end of the world. I wanted it to be a little bit heavier. I didn't.
I guess.
I mean, I liked the jokes.
The movies are made for kids. Like, it's not made for us.
Well,
it's
PG-13, right? So, right, my point is that it could have been heavier, right? If you look at, the first Captain America. Well, the Winter Soldier is kind of on the far end of the Marvel spectrum. But you've got, Captain America, First Avenger. You've got the first Iron Man. All of those have heavier moments that are more real, so to speak.
I think a lot of that, like, before they started letting directors do their own thing, yes. A lot of those movies had heavier moments. I think as soon as they announced the director for this movie, having seen a couple of his movies, I knew exactly what it was going to be. He doesn't have heavy moments in any of his movies.
Maybe some of these things shouldn't have happened, and maybe Ragnarok wasn't the right story to go with, because you picked heavy things to put in the movie.
They picked the movie being called Thor Ragnarok before they picked the director.
Call it, like, Thor Planet
right,
Hulk.
You could still do the Ragnarok part, all right? But there's other things, like, it's not directly connected to the comic books. There's things they could have done differently that would have removed at least some of these heavy elements. Right, and if you as a director have to do comedy and you can't do the heavy moments, that's harder for me, because some of my favorite shows like Futurama and Scrubs do both really, really well, and I need that, because if it's straight comedy the entire time, then why do I care about any of the bad stuff that happens?
You don't really. I mean, I'm not really arguing with you, because I really do agree that there should have been some more weight to some of the scenes, but I mean, I don't know. I get why he did it. You know, it's you can't go from the comedy like they had in this movie to a dark scene. It just, like, it wouldn't have worked.
I don't know. I've seen it done before in other contexts.
Not this kind. Like, his specific kind of comedy, I feel like, wouldn't have worked with trying to introduce some darker, heavier elements, personally. But, I mean, I could be
wrong.
Maybe
you're right. But there's one thing I do want to talk about, because it's the crux of the whole climax of the movie. And maybe, Ray, you can explain this since you know the comics better. But how is Hela's power tied to the buildings of Asgard?
What do you mean?
They said in order to stop her, they had to let Ragnarok happen, because she gets her power from Asgard. So, like,
the realm, I think. Isn't Asgard the realm?
But how does that work?
They all... I mean, they all are slightly more powerful on Asgard because, it's... Think of it the way... The moon has an effect on our weight and our gravity. Like, we can float and you can lift stuff and things like that. This environment makes them more powerful. She's never been in any other realm. She's conquered some of them beside Odin, but
they didn't really, they framed it more like she gets more powerful. She's unique in that she gets more powerful over time being in Asgard.
So here's the thing. In the comics, she becomes more powerful the more dead there are.
So she is the goddess altogether.
Well, I mean, she was killing a bunch of people in Asgard. So,
well, I mean, that's true, but that's not how it was framed.
Christian mythology gets the name Hel from her. So, you know, she's always been associated with evil and death.
It kind of felt like, you know, if Superman bakes in the sun longer and longer, he gets stronger and stronger.
And he can punch through and punch the artist for his comic book and changes. Yeah, Superman Prime 1 million should have never happened.
To me?
But no, but that's kind of what that came off as.
Yeah.
And it just, that was weird. Because if she's really their sister, at least Thor's sister from a blood perspective, how come he's not equally powerful on Asgard?
Well, if you've noticed, he became that way. He
had those abilities when he got mad.
I will say, this is the first movie that pointed out that he was like the god of lightning and not
the god
of hammers. Like, yes. That final scene with him.
The scene with Hulk, we didn't talk about much, but I mean, when he gets like the lightning punches, that was pretty freaking cool.
Yeah.
And to be able to knock Hulk around like that is not a joke. Like, that's very powerful.
Well, and I like the moment he had with his father, with Odin, and Odin explains the hammer. He's like, your power never came from the hammer. It was to help you harness
the god of
power.
Hammers?
Yeah, I love that. Like, that was
a great,
really great
line.
I thought that was a great moment.
That totally reminded me of, like, Mufasa appearing in the sky. I was like, yes, it's the Mufasa moment.
Yeah,
and I wanted that, because that, to me, was slightly more emotional than his death earlier in the film.
Like, that was a really good moment. I thought that was cool, because Thor doesn't need the hammer, right? That's the whole point. And I guess he
his
still needed
everything. Eye is missing, and they have the lightning coming out of it, and I was like, oh, so cool.
Yeah, I feel so. That scene, I feel like, should have had a bigger impact too. When your main character, who's an Avenger, loses an eye, like, he's the first one in the MCU to actually be like
maimed,
seriously injured in a way that is lasting.
We don't know how it's going to have effect, but War Machine was pretty crippled.
Paralyzed.
Well, he was walking at the end of the movie.
With, like, assistance.
But what I mean is, like, we're supposed to believe he's recovering.
Or at the very least, Tony Stark is going to build him a suit.
Right.
Versus Thor at the end of the movie has an eye patch.
Right.
So, you know, like, the difference here is, you know, Rhodey's going to get better. He's going to be fine. Thor's missing an eye.
Except
now.
We don't know for sure that he's not going to get better, because we have the time stone that can just,
sure,
like, reverse things, and he's already friends with Doctor Strange. So, I mean,
things that can fix that. I feel like Thor, on a personal level, wouldn't let Doctor Strange do that.
Probably not. I don't think it's going to change, but I'm saying that we're in a universe where it could easily change without any issue.
So, I do want to talk about Loki and Thor, because I think that this movie pulled off what the X-Men movies have been trying to do between Professor X and Magneto for 15 years better.
So, Loki in the comics is truly evil. He hates Thor. He hates Baldur. He hates everybody. He's screwed with Sif. Like, he's maimed her. He is truly evil. Hela is not. She is just this being of death. She's the Grim Reaper, where she's not bad. She's just there. She's also Loki's daughter, and the wolf is her brother. So I love that she was changed to the sister. I always hated that she was Loki's daughter. So I was happy with that switch, I will say that. Incredibly happy with Hela as a whole. She is the first female villain. Maya Hansen in Iron Man 3 was supposed to be the main villain, but they said that girls don't buy toys. Like, bitch, I would have bought that Barbie doll. Anyway, so I'm happy with Hela. But yes, Loki in this, like, because Tom Hiddleston was such a hit with female fans in particular, but fans as a whole, they made him good. They wanted him to be an anti-hero, just an antagonist, not a villain, and I loved the relationship between Thor and Loki, especially when Thor just flat out said, like, maybe we just shouldn't talk to each other. Maybe that's our relationship.
Yeah, that was a good scene.
That was
so
good.
I do
want
to say one thing that I think Taika Waititi did really well and did going into this movie, said he was going to do, and that the other Thor movies I think have missed, was that he said that Thor needed to be the coolest person in the movie.
Yes.
And the other Thor movies, I think, kind of missed the mark on that, because you're like, there's some really cool stuff happening.
It
and it's
came
not,
up short.
Yeah. This one, they made a point to make Loki look bad.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a point to, you know, make Hulk look bad and make Thor look like the coolest guy in the movie. And I think they definitely succeeded with that. And that's why it made me like Thor more, because maybe they went a little heavy on the Loki stuff. You know, kind of trying to make him look not as cool as Thor,
But he had his moments.
He did.
When he got up and cheered after, like, Thor had been beaten,
that was a great loved moment. It.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Oh, we haven't even talked about the Grandmaster.
Jeff Goldblum is the best Jeff Goldblum in this movie. Yeah.
He's the best Jeff Goldblum in every movie.
Jeff Goldblum is absolutely one of my favorite actors ever. I love him to death. But he's just himself with cool clothes and makeup.
Yeah, like, yeah. Which is okay. It works in the context of the movie.
When Waititi asked, like, who was allowed to ad-lib, and he was like, there were three actors I let ad-lib, and it was Chris, Mark, and Jeff.
And probably himself, I
yeah,
imagine.
Right. But, like, yeah. He said all of Korg's lines weren't written down at all.
I can believe it.
Somebody else was supposed to play Korg, and they backed out, and so he had to step up, and he said he was just literally talking to Chris's face the whole time. And so, he said that watching Jeff just riff was so great. And he's like, how am I going to tell him to do anything else? I have no authority over Jeff Goldblum.
He's Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, right. You just let him do his thing.
You know, no, he was wonderful, especially at the end, in the after credits scene, you know, where he comes out. I just want to say that y'all did a great job.
Great job on the revolution.
Let's just call it a tie.
Yeah. Call it a tie. It's so great. It really makes me want to see him and, you know, Benicio Del Toro.
Oh, yeah, since they're supposed to be brothers.
Watch an entire movie of that.
I want to see that happen. I know, like, I really don't think it will, based on...
Well, they want it to happen. Like, Feige has said that he wants to get them together. He thinks that would be really cool, but...
With them both being in outer space, it makes sense that they could have an entire scene with them together in Infinity War. Because Benicio's supposed to come back, and Jeff Goldblum's contract is for 2 movies, I think.
See, I'd like to see him do something kind of like, what were those short web episodes they did with Thor and, like, his roommate or whatever?
Yeah, that was Daryl. Great.
Yeah, yeah. I'd like to see that kind of style, but for the collector.
You know, that's canon, right? Like, yeah.
I mean, I think that would be funny, right? Like, if you did the same thing for these two guys in space.
I think they should be, like, the Waldorf and Statler.
Oh, that's interesting. Like the Grandmaster's, like the collector or somebody has something.
Because they are superior beings. They like to meddle, but they don't like to destroy. They're not Thanos after
power.
What
if they're just watching Infinity War happen from, like, the Grandmaster's palace?
Popcorn.
Right?
And, like, he has just some satellites running around Earth.
Okay. Sure, why not?
Well, maybe there's a fight, like, who's going to watch it or who's going over to whose house? Are you going to watch it from Sakaar or nowhere?
Yeah. So
did you guys read about the Infinity War footage that they showed at San Diego Comic-Con last year?
No. I've kind of kept away from it until I could see a decent copy of it.
Okay. So you don't even know what happens in it?
No.
Well, I'm going to talk about it. Fine. So sorry. I was actually hoping that they would show it at the end of the movie. But basically, in the Infinity War teaser that they showed at San Diego Comic-Con, you see Thor just kind of floating, or you see the Guardians flying through space, and they run into Thor's body, essentially, hits the windshield, and, you know, they all make comedy jokes about hitting the guy, clean it off the windshield or whatever, and they pull him inside, and obviously, it goes on for a little bit, but that was the main part that connects to this movie. I feel like when the mid-credit scene... with the ship behind, you know, the big ship behind it, the little ship. I feel like that was directly what happens right before that Infinity War teaser, right? Like, that ship blows this ship up, and
that Thor, makes sense.
Yeah, is, like, floating in space now because this ship got destroyed.
So all the Asgardians are dead?
Well, Thor didn't die when he was floating in space, so, I mean, there's something going on there.
They are basically gods. I mean, they can't survive being in space by themselves.
Yeah,
Milano.
And you know Loki's not going to die.
20,000 people or whatever.
Also, like, Loki obviously picked up the Tesseract,
clearly.
Thanos has that gem. So, at the beginning of Infinity War...
That was
so
one of my favorite scenes, is Hela in that vault. When she walks
by
and she says...
The Infinity Gauntlet?
Yeah, when she says fake and...
That's not bad.
Yeah, that was great. She's like, but this, the eternal flame. Like, that was so good.
One thing I did want to make a point about that is that when they showed the footage for San Diego Comic-Con, he didn't have an eye patch on. And maybe it's like the trailer scenario where he still had both eyes with the lightning coming out in the trailer, but then in the movie he was missing an eye.
Yeah.
But then there's a lot of people that are like, he gets his eye fixed on the ship. You know, so
yeah, they
knows.
Have that tech.
I'm pretty sure they just didn't want to show the spoiler of him not having an eye at San Diego Comic-Con.
Or the effect wasn't done yet.
Or that, yeah.
You know, that happens too.
But it's just an eye patch. Well, I mean, it's not like it's...
Well, I guess, yeah. Unless, like, maybe the eye patch, like, got blown off when the ship got blown
maybe,
up or something.
Yeah,
I don't
true.
Know. But... I really hope he keeps the eye patch. You
it's
know.
Pretty
I
sweet
too.
Looking, yeah.
Well, because I think it's a
and
big,
the short hair.
I think it's a good character.
It's a turning point for who he is, because the fact, like, she's making fun of the fact that he looks like his father, but he's realizing that he has to take over that role. I mean, that's the whole end of the movie.
He accepted the King of Asgard position, yeah.
So, like, that's him accepting that, essentially. And I don't think he would... To walk that back would be to take back that advancement of the character.
Yeah, I don't think they will.
So
I hope
not. But I just thought that was an interesting thing that people are kind of talking about is, you know, did he get his eye fixed? Did they just not have, you know, what was going on between an Infinity War teaser? I was really disappointed they didn't have that. I liked that Grandmaster scene at the end, but man, that Infinity War teaser would have been pretty sweet. And it would have directly related to that mid-credit scene where you're going, is that Thanos' ship? We don't know.
It is.
And you would have gotten the Guardians in there, which would have been great.
That ship is the Sanctuary 2, which is Thanos' ship, and it pretty much means death.
But, like, I mean, just the general audience doesn't probably know that that's Thanos' ship.
Well, but if you saw Guardians, then you know that that's what their ships look like. Because it's in the first Guardians.
Thanos' ship is?
No, but one that looks exactly like it.
Is it?
Yeah, because, what's his name? In the first Guardians movie, where they have the dance battle, the ship that crashed looks exactly
Ronan.
Like... Ronan, thank you. It looks just like Ronan's ship.
I guess
ship.
I didn't...
Maybe Thanos' is larger. Like. Thanos' may look larger, right? But that whole scene where the ship's coming down...
There's no scale for Thor's ship. Other than the fact that, you know, there's like 30 people in it.
So I have no idea what the sizes are. But in the first Guardians, when the Nova Corps has the net and they're trying to stop that ship from
landing...
That's
true. It's pretty big.
Right? That looks just like Thanos' ship. So, I mean, that was an easy connect the dots for me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's fair. I didn't pay... You pay more attention to what spaceships look like than I do, just because of your fandoms and stuff.
Well, it was a very specific design of a ship, so, you know. All right, well, we are getting close on time here, because we've been talking a lot about... We haven't even talked about Hulk, like, at all.
Or Heimdall.
Valkyrie. I mean, yeah, maybe we'll just have to go long on this one.
Let's go long, because I want to talk about those three characters.
So let's talk Hulk.
I loved him. I loved him in this movie. I loved him as Hulk. I loved him as Bruce. And my favorite scene sticks out. It's the one where they're both apologizing to each other on the bed. And that's great because we've seen so many bickering, so many little arguments, but something happens and they have to push aside and get over it. We've never seen any of them apologize and make up and be friends again. So that was important to me, and it really proved to me that these characters are friends, that they leave these big battles and they still talk to each other. They call each other up. It's the party scene in Age of Ultron, and it's this scene that makes me very happy with all the characters as just with their personal interconnections.
I actually didn't really like Hulk in this movie, to be honest with you. Like, I thought the fight scene with him and Thor was cool. But again, I would have been much happier if I had no idea that Hulk was in this movie and had walked in and seen that fight. It was kind of all spoiled in the trailers. But
because they do spend a lot of time talking about how Thor is going to have to fight the champion and all this other stuff. You're like, well, of course it's Hulk.
Yeah. Well, but if we had known going into that, then it would have been like, who's the champion? You know, they're really playing this up.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my fault for, I guess, watching the trailers. But... you know, I didn't really like the way Hulk, like, your problem with Thor, with how he all of a sudden can talk now and all this other stuff, talk a certain way now. Hulk, I had the same problem with it. I get it. They've been on an alien planet, but now he can carry on full conversations as the Hulk and just, you know, I didn't like the way he talked. I know he's not supposed to be smart or anything, but it just felt like he was talking to a child, which maybe that's what it's supposed to be. I don't know. I never really followed Hulk in the comic books, but it was more irritating than anything else to me.
I'm with you there because it's the same issue, right? And I get that they needed it.
I'm glad you said that because I was going to call you out for
it's the exact same issue. But you know, they needed the two characters to talk to each other somehow and communicate, so they made them talk, right? And I get that in the comic books he can talk kind of sometimes when it's convenient.
No, he can talk a lot. When he's Hulk, he has the vocabulary of a 4-year-old. My 4-year-old niece talks very well.
But is it the same intelligence as a 4-year-old,
so
too? Like,
Sakaar,
I feel like the vocabulary is one thing.
On Sakaar, he's highly intelligent. There's something about the planet that makes him talk as if he's Shakespearean all of a sudden. So he should have talked even better, to be honest.
Well, I wish he would have, because I didn't I was not feeling
the
it.
The issue is the prior movies have limited his vocabulary to, like, just GERS and maybe one or two.
And now
nerds.
We can carry on full conversations. Yeah. And know
that is the problem.
Stuff,
it's like this didn't set it up for this.
Right.
Yeah. But so I had the same problem with that as I did with the changes in Thor. I think they were. I get why they did all of that, right? Because how are you going to have Thor and Hulk get along and make up and be friends if one of them can't talk, right?
You have him do it as Bruce Banner.
Well, but then they can't do the big fight and they have to...
Well, he can because he can still fight as Hulk and then talk as Bruce Banner.
And then he just goes back and forth? Is that the idea?
I guess. Have him be more cognizant of what's happening as when he's the Hulk and then the whole problem's solved.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they could have done it that way. That's interesting. Yeah.
I honestly, the stuff with Bruce Banner and Hulk, I thought was great. Like the whole sun's going down, buddy, or whatever, big guy.
Oh, my God.
I laughed every time. Dr. F, who's not in chat tonight, but I was talking to him about it, and he said that he didn't really get it, but then I explained it to him. He's like, oh, yeah, it's from Age of Ultron. Yeah, and I mean, I thought that was great. I laughed every time.
I love the idea of all of the Avengers having to do that with Hulk at one time or another.
Right?
It's just so great.
Yeah.
Any response to Natasha?
I
want to
see Black Panther do it. That's what I'm waiting for.
I
want to
see Tony do it. I think that
I could very easily see Tony do it. That's the thing. It's like Black Panther, I have a harder time seeing him.
I think Tony's got such an ego on him that he'd have a hard time with it.
It's just a joke to him. So,
everything's a joke to him. Yeah, I mean, that's why his code name is Point Break.
Yeah.
Which was a great throwback to Age of Ultron.
There was a lot of throwbacks in this movie, actually.
And I'm glad that Waititi didn't forget about those. They forget about what has previously happened.
So. Yeah, it's important to watch the movies where your movie exists in.
But I feel like he didn't really like the other Thor movies. Like,
I can tell that.
I'm dead. Like, immediately the Warriors 3, boom, gone in like 2 seconds. You get nothing, and there was no heavy moment there. They were just dead.
I didn't even realize who they were at first, huh?
Yeah.
Zach,
except for Sif, I guess.
Zach leaned over and...
She's just not even...
Didn't even get an explanation. Natalie Portman gets an explanation.
Yeah.
Like, Sif, she dumped him.
Well, because they probably still want her on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or one of the other shows at some
Something
point.
Like
so.
That, yeah.
But they didn't kill off. They didn't kill off Natalie Portman's character.
I wish they would have.
You know, so she could still show up too.
Natalie Portman just didn't fit in that role ever.
Yeah,
she is a fantastic actress. And she definitely had the same chemistry with Chris Hemsworth that I would, which means that he's not attracted to her, but she is definitely attracted to him. Like, that's what's happening there. So I was happy that she wasn't in this film. I love her. I just didn't think she ever fit with it.
Well, there wouldn't have been a good reason to have her in this movie anyway. None of it takes place on Earth other than a few small scenes where they're looking for Odin.
On the green screen.
Yeah, or Doctor Strange's manner.
Oh, we didn't talk about Doctor
so
Strange
good.
Cameo. This was the Doctor Strange I wanted the entire Doctor Strange movie. He was great. Teleporting all over the place. He floats in like a boss. Like
he just keeps moving.
Yeah. And Loki's been falling for half an hour.
That was so good.
Yeah.
So good.
I loved it. And he wore gloves. I loved the gloves.
Yes.
Like it was a little thing, but it made a big difference for me, you know?
I like that this is the progression of the character, though, right? Because he's still becoming Doctor Strange in his solo movie. Now he is. He's been Doctor Strange for a while.
It's
he's
perfect.
Just
a year now. Yeah, he's good. Yeah. But him immediately grabbing Thor and bringing him over here, and he's like, what the hell did you do? Like,
why did you bring him here?
So good. So
Earth
good.
Earth has wizards now.
D&D, man, I'm telling you.
Yeah, that was great. I loved that. Although it wasn't much more than what the after credit scene was in Doctor Strange, unfortunately, but
I mean, there were some fun moments to it. I liked
that he turned
it
into an umbrella. Oh,
yes.
Turning Mjolnir into an umbrella. That was brilliant. I loved that with the umbrella just into his hand.
Isn't that Loki that did that?
Was it?
No,
that was, I thought Doctor Strange just sanctum.
They were on the street like that, and when they go meet Odin, it's like
Fair
that.
Enough.
Pretty sure that's a Loki illusion. So
I loved it either way.
Yeah.
Like that was great.
Yeah.
The scene where he just holds it out.
Yeah, and you hear it crashing. Like, you know there's all these artifacts in the sanctum and it's just breaking away. Yeah.
Benedict's up there, like, so annoyed.
Yeah.
He fits that role really well.
Yeah, but he has the time stone, so he can just reverse it all. Sure. Yeah.
But it works, because he's basically Sherlock Holmes with superpowers, you know? So.
And an American accent.
That floating in was, like, straight out of a comic book. Loved
so
it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm hoping he gets to be a little more front and center in the future movies.
So that is what I want from these cameos. I don't want Captain America showing up as Loki just randomly.
I thought that was funny, to be fair. I laughed at that.
It was a cool scene, don't get me wrong. But the fact that, like,
What?
In the second Thor movie.
We're so used to...
when they're walking through the halls in Asgard and, like, Loki's joking and then he turns into Captain America.
Would you rather me be one of your friends?
Oh, I forgot about that.
But those are the cameos we're used to. They come on set, make a 30-second appearance, and then they're gone.
I did like the cameo of Spider-Man with the Captain America where he was doing the PSAs.
That was inventive. I think they're getting better at referencing
But a lot of the teacher's like, yeah, I think he's a war criminal now, but whatever.
Hannibal Burris is hilarious.
Yeah, that was great. We didn't talk about Valkyrie at all.
Let's talk about her.
So, she was really cool.
She was.
I thought
Rachel
that
was not excited about Valkyrie before the movie. I remember she was. You seemed like you hated the way she looked or something.
I still hate her costume. Everything about it. The first one on Sakaar when she's Scrapper 142 and the weird angel thing she's wearing at the end. I hate the way it looks. I think they can dress Tessa Thompson better. I love the tattoos, both the makeup on her face, the tattoo on her wrist. I love that all the Valkyries have a military tattoo. That, to me, is entirely cool. So, I loved her character. I hated her look. That's all. Tessa Thompson, I've seen her in 4 other films now, and she is beautiful. And,
I thought her style matched Thor's. So I didn't really have a problem with
it. The MCU looks like they have the same costume designer for everything. It's all the exact same, like, webbed fabric.
They do. Ironhead Studios and Weta. Especially since they filmed a lot of this in Australia and New Zealand. So it's definitely Weta.
I mean, Thor's had a... I mean, his look has obviously changed over his movies. But there's a lot of similar tones and material styles in that. And she was just kind of matching.
Yeah, I will say this. I loved his look on Sakaar.
Thor's?
Yeah.
I like the helmet.
Yeah.
I thought the helmet was great.
Yeah, I'm hoping they do the Marvel Legends version. You know how they released the Marvel Legends helmet?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great.
I kind of wish that there was some way for him to keep that helmet, because I just thought it was a really cool look.
I thought the whole design was neat.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I thought the additional colors were great. The teal on his shoulder, and it was... The red on his face.
It was a very colorful movie. It clearly, you know, was more of a Guardian style film than, you know, anything else.
I never thought that Thor film should be dark and dreary because, you know,
fantasy isn't.
You're in a world where the transportation is a rainbow bridge. They call
it
that.
There's Pegasus. They're real. Like, you see it in that. I mean, that was a cool scene. I wish there had been more of that when they're, like, all flying in on the Pegasus in, like, slow motion. I mean, I love that.
They created a new way. That was the first time a shot like that was done. He said that he set up 100 strobe lights and had each one of them go off. Instead of the camera moving, the strobe lights moved.
It was beautiful. Whatever that was.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
That was a cool war scene.
It was a really nice scene. It would have been cool to see a little bit more of that, but I get it, right? You're introducing this villain that's been trapped away, so we have to quickly explain why she was trapped away, right?
No, and everything was rushed in the movie. So, yeah.
Let's talk about that for a second.
It's only a 2-hour and 10-minute movie. Now, I say only because it still felt really rushed, and
the first act at least did for me.
I thought the whole thing felt really
everything
rushed.
Felt rushed to me too.
I mean, think about how many characters are in this movie that have to get together and change sides.
It did introduce a lot of
stuff. We barely talked
about
Korg at all.
Yeah, we haven't touched Korg at all.
And he was great.
Right?
Probably my favorite part of the movie. Yeah. Just
I don't know about that, but he was really good.
He's my favorite new thing. You know, like, he's my favorite thing that they introduced in this.
Bring him into Infinity War, please.
I want Hela and Valkyrie in Infinity War, too. Because, I mean, we're supposed to think Hela died, but there's no body, so...
Also, she's immortal goddess of death, so...
I'm clinging to that the way people are still clinging to Red Skull. Like, that one...
To Red Skull hard,
I know,
trust me.
Like, get over that one, because Hugo Weaving hated that role.
I don't care, he's coming back. Just make the skull look
but
different.
But how would she... Like, she would just be... basically.
Maybe they were wrong about where she gets her power from or whatever, and it was actually from death and not from Asgard.
You mentioned this a while ago, that there's a rumor that Hela is death, and Thanos is in love with her.
It would make more sense, because how are they going to introduce a live-action death in an Infinity War movie that's supposed to be a heist movie about Thanos?
I mean, you don't have to introduce death at all. I mean, does he really need another motivation other than wanting the Infinity Stones?
Yes, because death is like his entire character in the comic books.
But in the movies, we know nothing about him. So they changed who Hela is.
Yeah, but I feel like that's an important part of his character. Like, he defeats himself, and that's his whole thing. And I think that's a very different way to deal with a character in a movie like that. Because everything is textbook at this point.
After the first Avengers, Brian Michael Bendis, who just switched to DC wrote an entire arc about the origin of Thanos, and death was, like, the motivation. So I feel like they wouldn't have written that.
Okay.
If they weren't going to bring it in. And at this point, that story is too cool to not talk about.
Yeah, I just really... I want him to... I just love the fact that he basically defeats himself every time because he's just trying to impress death. He's trying to impress...
It's all for a woman.
A girl, yeah. And it's... And I think that's something that a lot of people can relate to. And so I... But this is like an intergalactic badass with Infinity Stones that can bend space and time. And,
Ryan, would you conquer the universe for your girl?
Yeah, of course. Especially if I had a gauntlet that could, like, you know, magically make me do it like that. I'd probably fail just like Thanos, but who knows, right? But I do think that's an interesting take on the character, and that would be something I really want to see from that.
Okay.
Personally. Right.
So we've been talking for a while. We're well over time. Is there anything else you guys want to touch on before we give our final thoughts?
I don't want to see any more crap about Valkyrie's sexuality. I think it had nothing to do with the film whatsoever. They didn't touch on her being bisexual at all, except that, you know, she thought another Valkyrie was hot and she thought Thor was hot. It was just a few looks
but
here
that's
and
not
there.
Even,
and
that's not in the movie, though.
No.
The only thing that's in the movie is that one of the other Valkyrie, who of course is a woman, sacrifices her life to save her. But that's happened with dude bros in army movies for decades.
Self-sacrifice has been a war movie trope since the beginning, so it could have been anything, in my opinion.
So there's nothing in the movie that would make you think that she has the hots for anybody but Thor by the end of that movie.
I am very glad that if women especially want to, you know, see representation in this, cool. That's awesome. Good for you. I'm glad you see that. I, as a bisexual woman, did not see that, and I thought it would have been even cooler if Valkyrie had the hots for Hela while she was still in good standing in Asgard and had to go up against her. Like, I thought that would have been a cool storyline, but yeah. It is too much. This isn't a Valkyrie and Hela film. It's Thor. So,
Ryan, any final thoughts on Thor?
I don't care about Valkyrie's sexuality, but I do care about putting Korg in with Squirrel Girl in the TV show. Come on, guys. That would be perfect. Yes.
We want Korg and Squirrel Girl. Yes. We want Collector and Grandmaster. Yeah,
exactly.
This is what we want.
Sitcoms. Come on. I want them specifically to be sitcoms, like Friends. They're living on Earth.
Look, they gotta
roommates.
They got to put something on this new streaming service.
Thank you. That's it.
I want to see Bruce go back to Earth and Natasha just be like, where have you been? Like, I want to see old school honeymooners.
I love Lucy style, yeah.
Yes, like you have some splaining to do.
Right, I'm into it. Let's have three different sitcoms, Marvel. We're pitching them right now.
This is it.
And then we bring them all together for the Avengers sitcom.
I like it. Wow.
You heard it here first, folks.
So, do you guys want to try and give this a letter grade? I know it's difficult sometimes.
Okay, so talking about it with you guys, knowing that you share my concerns and everything, like, I'm going to raise my score. My score was, I was going to go with a C-. I'm going to go with a B- now. I love that I could talk to you guys about this, and you have very similar concerns that I did.
Ryan?
I don't give out A's, really.
Ever.
But it's definitely a solid B+ for me, because I think that it was a lot of fun, and I don't care that it wasn't dark, really. Like, at the end of it, I left smiling and having a good time. And ultimately, when I go to the movies, I want to have a good time, and that's
right.
So
that's
it accomplished the goal,
and
I felt great when I left and enjoyed it thoroughly. So yeah, B+ for me.
In chat, Bruce Wayne 25 would like to see Lady Death in Infinity War, but he doesn't think that he hadn't thought about Hela being Lady Death, so he finds that idea interesting.
Yep.
For me, I really did enjoy the movie a lot. I had a ton of fun, and I know that that's the point. But it's hard for me to look at it separately from the MCU because they've made the MCU such a big deal, having it be so interconnected. So that does knock it down a little bit for me. So I would also give it a B-. I think it was really fun and enjoyable. Yes. And so if you like Thor as a character at all, or you like sci-fi and fantasy movies, go see it. It's definitely worth seeing it in theaters. It's a giant spectacle. I think it was the best MCU movie to come out this year for sure. No question about that.
Do you think
it's
the funniest MCU movie?
Ever? Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think it's funnier than the original Guardians, and that was probably my first.
No, I mean, Guardians, I think Guardians, for me, was a better film overall, but I wouldn't say it's funnier. This is a funnier movie.
This is a comedy. That's the thing. It's like, it's 100% comedy. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, best MCU movie of the year for me. A lot of fun. I am super stoked and looking forward to Black Panther. I cannot wait.
February, right?
Yeah, February. So it's right around the corner. And then in May is Infinity War. So,
is it May? Wow, that's not that long.
So, I mean, we're talking in
November,
like,
is Ant-Man and Wasp.
Next November, yeah.
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 A year from now.
We're looking at, you know, in the next 7 months, we will find out what if Thanos was worth all the weight.
My guess, no.
So,
although a heist movie featuring Thanos, which is what they're pitching it as, sounds really interesting to me.
I'm okay with Thanos. That.
I don't know if it'll be stealth, but it's going
to
be heist.
I mean, it'll be the 19th MCU movie. It took 19 movies for Thanos to actually have, like, walk around.
He was promised.
I'm just going to laugh when he floats on his throne everywhere. Like, he's, like, stealing the Infinity Stones, but he's just like...
Yes, that's very likely now that I think about it. But no, I mean, up until now, he's been, you know, in a couple of scenes of Guardians, and he, you know, was in a very, Avengers. Very quick after credit scene in Avengers, so.
And oh my god, the fanboys that had to Google that purple scrunchy face. Oh my god, I was the only one who walked out of that theater, I swear, and I was like, that was Thanos. I had a dude come up to me and be like, who's Thanos? And I was like, teehee.
Big nerd boy.
See, I saw it and I was like, man, Thanos looks a lot like Brolin. I didn't know that was him at the time. Like, man,
that wasn't Brolin.
It wasn't?
In the Avengers, they had
it. It looks
cast
just
him.
Like him, though.
They did a good job.
I guess they're lucky they got somebody who looked like the rendering. But all right, well, let us know what you thought of Thor Ragnarok at Heroes Podcast, heroespodcast.com. You can find us, of course, on iTunes and Google Play, as well as Blog Talk Radio. See all three of us, along with several other of our hosts, at Kansas City Comic Con this weekend, November 10th, 11th. And 12th.
We do want to remind you that next week we are having our panel as our episode, so we will not be live, okay? We will be returning the week after for our Justice League review.
Yes, so there will be an episode next week. If you don't come to Kansas City Comic Con, it will be our panel. You'll be able to catch that on Wednesday next week if you miss us at the con. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. I guess we'll catch you next time.
Bye!